Okay, so I hear you like books.
Why, yes, I do.
That's right. When I was your age, television was called books. And this is a special book.
Because when you read a book as a child, it becomes part of your identity in a way that no other reading in your whole life does. And I have gotten carried away.
Yeah. Yeah, you have.
Are you seeing the books? Everything you would want to read is right here. Feel it. Feels good, right? Just smell it. Nothing smells like that.
Hi, friends. Welcome to episode 6 of Team Friendship Reads the Newberries. Today, we'll be chatting about the book Julie of the Wolves by Jean Craighead George. This book was the winner of the 1973 Newbery Award. But before we get into this exciting book, I want to introduce my co-hosts. Today, I'm Leah, here with Lauren.
Hello.
And Mandalay.
What up, friends?
And we are, well, I don't know. I'm pretty excited about this book. Are you guys excited at least a little
bit? I'm excited now.
I'm excited because I got to page 110.
So she's excited to find out how it ends.
Yes.
Well, before we dive into all of that, we actually have listener mail. How awesome is that?
People are starting to listen to us, not just our family.
People love us.
Yes. So let's get into that. We have some shout outs to our friends and people that we don't actually know that have written in. So first, I'm going to read one from our friend, Kathy. Full disclosure, we know this person. She commented on our website, which is teamfriendshippodcast.com. You should go there. She says, guys, I have listened to you all day while I'm supposed to be working, and I love it. It's like I get to sit here and have conversations with you. I love hearing you laugh and hearing how many times you reference Gilmore Girls. Love you. Thank you, Kathy. You're the boss.
Thanks, Kathy.
Seriously, like, I think each of us were having kind of a rough day that day for whatever reason, and she seriously, like, made all of our day. Like, we were like,
yes, she did.
Just brightened my day.
Well, I loved it because that's kind of like, that's what I want it to be, is just we're having conversations with our friends about these awesome books.
Yeah.
And we love Gilmore Girls.
We do. Can't hide it.
Oh, anyway, and Lauren is going to read one.
Yes, this is from Laura. She posted on our Facebook page, which is Team Friendship on Facebook. She says, I am about halfway through listening to episode 5, Flora and Ulysses, and I just had to look you ladies up on Facebook. Wow, you are all real and funny and honest. Episode 5 is your best yet, and I will look forward to your next podcast. So thanks, Laura. That's high praise.
Yes.
I thought episode 5 was our best yet as well.
If she started at the beginning,
bless her. Because those first few were really rough.
I feel like that was partially due to content, though, if anyone recalls the first book.
The first book was rough, but I think, you know, we were just figuring out stuff and all that, so.
And we've also run into people while we've been out and about, or people that we know that have actually listened to our podcast, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been kind of funny. Like, we were at Nora's swim lessons, and I'm sitting there, and this lady walks up to me, and she says, are you Lauren? And I said, yes. And she says, I'm friends with Leah on Facebook. And so she knew me through that, and she'd seen the pictures of Nora, so she was we were talking about Nora, and then all of a sudden she says, I listened to your podcast, and I was like, oh, and like then I'm sure my face got beet red, and it's because it's like, you never expect someone to actually listen to you. And so she's like, oh, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I really like it. I was like, oh, okay. So that was really neat. So thanks, Brandy, for giving us some love,
listening
to us. We appreciate that.
We really do. And my husband makes fun of me all the time because anytime our real friends or people we really know will say something about our podcast or find out about our podcast, I get really embarrassed. And he's like, why are you recording this if you don't want people to listen to it? Right. Like, I don't know. I just... So what some of those people are, the pastor of our church and his wife. His wife is very much into children's literature, and they found out that we did a podcast, and so they listened to some of them, or at least started to, and now they definitely tease me every time they see me because they know I get embarrassed whenever they mention it. But we are so thankful for Joshua and Liz,
if you're listening. Thank you.
We're thankful that you listen as well. But anyway, Mandy, have you had any run-ins with listeners?
I have no friends. just kidding.
Poor man. If you want to be Mandy's friend,
just comment.
Log on to
go to twofriendshippodcast.com.
We'll post an application. Goodness. I've had friends and coworkers that, you know, I've talked to about it, and they've said that they're going to check it out, but I haven't heard if any of them have checked it out. So,
well, if you're listening to this and you're friends with Mandy, let her know that you're listening. You'll make her day.
But I'm the same way. Like, when I start to talk about it, like, it'll just like slip out, like, oh, I'm recording my podcast tonight, and then I'm like, oh. But they're all like, oh yeah, what, you know, what is it? And I tell them, and they're like, oh, that's interesting. So it's not as bad as I think it is. I get embarrassed too, but
well, I'm just,
I shouldn't.
I'm highly critical of myself, so.
Well, and I think, I don't know, especially when you're starting out, it's so intimidating because I know we listen to podcasts, and so the fact that we're making this effort, it's like.
And like, I really don't think don't we're know. At that level of any of the podcasts I listen to yet. Like, they're all very professional and not like completely like they have fun and make jokes, and they definitely make mistakes. And one of the ones I listened to, like, they just, the guy records it live and he doesn't edit anything out. And so it's really, really funny. It's like things will happen and he'll just shout, edit.
We cannot do that.
Our podcast is heavily edited.
Yes. Thanks to Lauren. Lauren is our editor. We are so thankful for her and all of her hard work.
Yes. I'm getting better. I'm learning.
Oh, goodness.
Well, guys, should we move on to our next segment, For the Love of Books?
Yes.
For the love of books.
Oh, that's nice, Mandy.
Oh, great.
It's my jingle.
Yeah. Maybe you could record that separately.
We're
gonna
need
send
to record
it to
that,
me.
Yeah.
I'll just insert it there.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, Leah, what have you been into this past month?
Yes. I believe I mentioned this book before, but I know a little bit more about it, and apparently I'm on a wolf kick. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but... I recently started a series called The Incorrigible Children of Ashton Place, based on a book recommendation from another book podcast. The author's name is Mary Rose Wood, and this book is set in Victorian England. And I was trying to do some research on it because I knew I was going to talk about it on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And some of the reviews compare it to Lemony Snicket and say that it's like a cross between Lemony Snicket and Jane Eyre.
That's
so
interesting.
If you're interested in those, yeah. So it's about a young governess who's hired to take care of three young children that we find out were apparently raised by wolves. And so they act like little wolves, and they are just adorable. I definitely fell in love with them pretty quickly, and especially the youngest one. Everything she learns how to say, she adds like... she adds woo at the end. In the book, I'm sure it's supposed to be like howling.
Yeah.
So for example, she ends up, kind of a spoiler alert, but you'll understand
that's
why.
Okay.
She ends up with a pet squirrel.
Oh, so that's very near and dear to your heart.
Exactly. She names it Nuts-a-Woo. So every time she talks about it, it's Nuts-a-Woo.
That's funny.
And I just think it's so cute. So anyway, it's very adorable. The recommended age level for reading it is the ages 8 to 12. But as a 30-year-old grown woman, I'm a big fan. So I'm on book 2 right now.
That's so fun. Hey, have you ever read the book Scaredy Squirrel?
No.
They're like children books. They're like picture books. They're hilarious. find it and read it. I have like several copies if you want.
I'm gonna need to borrow those.
They're really funny. Mandy, what have you been into this past month?
I mean, I'm constantly into multiple things. I don't really ever commit to anything, but I guess I'm trying to read the second book of that one series I was talking about, the Alice in Wonderland type.
Oh, okay.
Story. Oh, I think it's called Unhinged. So, not really far into that, so I'll just leave that. I have been trying to reread The Chronicles of Narnia. Okay. Because I haven't read those since I was, like, 12, so. And I'm actually probably halfway through The Magician's Nephew, so.
Wow, that's awesome.
Wow, man.
I know, I'm doing
so
well.
So proud of you.
Now, are you reading them in the order? Well, you're obviously reading them in the chronological order, then. Not in the order that he wrote them.
No, I'm reading them, you know, because they have numbers on them, so I follow those.
All right, that's good. That's okay. I don't think there's a right or wrong way. I was just wondering.
I don't think so either. So, and what else? I've been on and off, because I have a bunch of those Barnes & Noble collectible edition books, you know.
What makes it a Barnes & Noble collectible edition?
We'll have to post a picture because they're
the beautiful covers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're gorgeous.
They are really pretty.
I've been on and off reading The Wizard of Oz, and I started reading Winnie the Pooh a little bit after.
I want to read that.
I might lend
I've never
it to
read
you.
Them, and I...
Neither have I. That's
I
why
can't believe
like...
I've never read them. I need to.
I know, we're terrible people. Right? Why have we not exactly. read them?
I quote them all the time because they have such dear quotes.
They do.
They do. They have deep quotes, like very deep.
So that's about it for what I'm doing right now.
Very cool.
Lauren?
Well, I've kind of been doing kind of a thing that you've been doing, Mandy, like where I had started books and then I put them down and never finished them. And I think I had like 3 or 4 books that I had done that with. So I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm gonna finish all of these. So I had started reading The Book of Three, which is the first book in the Priding Chronicles by Lloyd Alexander. There's this really old Disney movie called The Black Cauldron, and that movie is based on this series of books.
You were telling us about that.
So I actually really enjoyed this book. It reminds me of The Lord of the Rings quite a bit. It has that Welsh language. Hmm. For me, it's Lord of the Rings for kids, basically.
Nice. It's right
there's
up your
so
alley.
Many things in it. That, like, there's like a wizard character and all the animals love him. And there's like a main hero guy and there's like a special sword. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. I recommend it. So there's several books in this series. So I'm planning to read the rest of them. And the other book that I had started but hadn't finished reading was it's Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston. It's a Star Wars book.
Because Lauren is a Star Wars nerd.
I love it.
Ahsoka's my favorite.
She's my favorite too. So Ahsoka is a character that was introduced in the animated TV series Star Wars: The Clone Wars, and she is the Padawan of Anakin Skywalker, who becomes Darth Vader.
Spoiler
I think
alert!
She's like 14 in the Clone Wars series, and then there's another animated series called Star Wars Rebels, and so she shows up mm-hmm. in that series as well. Those are both excellent series. If you enjoy Star Wars even a little bit, I highly recommend those, and they're really good for like kids like 7 and up. I highly recommend these. The storytelling for me in these series is better than the movies, and I love the movies. So that just tells you how good it is. But anyway, so this book Ahsoka takes place in between that time period in between the two animated series, so you kind of figure out, you know, how she got to where she got in Star Wars Rebels.
I was wondering what that book
and
was.
This book, it took me a little bit to get into it. Probably about page 70 is when I started to get into it a little bit more. It kind of was a little slow going for me at first, But once I got to page 70, I couldn't put it down. It was really, really good. So I enjoyed that. I also read Charlotte's Web this past month. I'd never read Charlotte's Web before.
Nice.
I read that. Really enjoyed that. That's a real easy read. It's a nice read. And that's by E.B. White, and he also wrote Stuart Little, and I'm going to read that next.
Aw, that's a cute story. I didn't know that.
And let's see, what else did I want to mention? I've just got a lot of book stuff here.
I'm proud of you, Lauren.
Thanks. Okay, so this is kind of book related. So there's this movie, it's called Kubo and the Two Strings. It's on Netflix now. It came out last year, and it got nominated for an Oscar. And I had heard about it, but I mean, it kind of looked kind of weird. And so anyway, but I had heard from a friend that it was good and I should watch it. So I did. And I love that movie. Like, I just can't get over this movie.
She really cannot. She talks about it quite often.
It's so good. Like, the story is good. It's stop motion animation. So it's really cool animation. The music is good. It's the same composer who did Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, that's the music. I didn't know that. Pride and Prejudice. That's awesome. Yeah.
It's so good. And it's based on Japanese folk tales and mythology. So it's so good. Watch it. And then watch it again. It's so good.
I felt bad for that movie because it came out at the exact same time as Zootopia. Mm-hmm. So it kind of... Yeah. I think it did, at least. Which, it was around that time.
I've seen Zootopia, and this movie is way better. I'll just tell you that right now. From, like, an adult perspective. Maybe as a kid, yeah. I would have liked Zootopia better. Probably. But I don't know. This movie is good. You gotta watch it. It's so good.
Everybody watch it right now. After you finish listening to our podcast.
If you're watching this and you have kids, it's more for like older kids. I would say 7 and up. There's some scary parts in it that might freak little kids out. So some, I guess, intense scenes. I like to use the language that they use down at the bottom of the video where it's like rated whatever for intense scenes. Intense imagery.
You're so official, Lauren.
I know, right? And then I had one more story that I wanted to share, if I could.
Yes.
And
please.
So I guess. thanks, guys. So I started listening to this NICU podcast. It's called NICU Now. And it's put out by an organization called Hand to Hold. And this is a nonprofit organization started by a mom whose her son was born at like 24 weeks. I think, and her daughter was born at like 32 weeks. So she's done the NICU journey. And so she just has done, I think it's like 15 or so episodes of this podcast. They're about 20, 30 minutes in length each episode. And in one of the episodes, she interviewed a man and his wife. And she actually interviewed them separately in two different episodes. But when she interviewed the dad, their daughter was born at 23 weeks, which is just kind of right on the edge of viability. When she was born, of course, they're given all these statistics of she's probably, you know, she might not make it. And if she does make it, she's going to have all these disabilities. And just not knowing what was going to happen, he and his wife just both decided, like, we're going to love her and we're going to invest in her emotionally, even though we don't know what's going to happen. And so he decided, you know, he's like, I can't, you know, my wife is pumping the milk and, you know, doing her motherly thing, but I can't do that. But he's like, I can read to her. And so he read the Harry Potter books to her, and he would say, like, he would read them to her and he would try to do the voices and do different things. And like, when it was time for him to leave and go, you know, he'd have to stop reading, and the nurses had been listening to him, and they would be like, no, don't go, we want to know what happens.
That's awesome.
But anyway, he and his wife co-wrote a book about their daughter's journey. So this little girl, I think, is like 5 years old now, 5 or 6. So now that their book is being published and they're getting a lot of publicity, you know, the story is out that they read Harry Potter to her. The dad said that he chose that book because, you know, Harry Potter he's the boy who lived. And so he mm-hmm. always called Juniper the girl who lived. So J.K. Rowling heard about it, and she mailed them like, whatever, like the special edition version of the books, and she signed all of them. And
that's so sweet.
The little girl says now that she's like, yeah, J.K. Rowling wrote those books for me. Harry Potter was written for me, even though she wasn't even born yet. But and so her parents are like, yeah, we'll let her think that for now.
That's so sweet. I love that story.
I know. It just really warmed my heart because I was like, oh, because that's I didn't read the Harry Potter books out loud to Nora, but I started reading the books while she was in the NICU just because I need you're sitting there for so long that you just need something to do. And so I would just sit there and read Harry Potter.
I think we mentioned it before, but if you're new to the podcast, Lauren's daughter was born quite early and spent several months in the NICU. So the NICU and fun NICU stories like that are very dear to all of our hearts. Yeah.
So yeah, if you've had a NICU journey, definitely check out NICU Now, this podcast. It's a really neat podcast. I've enjoyed it. I can't really, like, obviously everyone's journey is different, so I don't relate to everything that they talk about, but for the most part I can.
All right. Shall we roll on into the book news?
Book yes. news!
Insert book news jingle.
Oh boy.
I am less prepared this time, so I had a little help from Lauren, which I'm actually very interested in what you have sent me here.
I'm glad.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. to star as Dr. Doolittle in new film.
That's going to be awesome.
I love Robert Downey Jr. I am a huge Iron Man fan, so this excites me. Like, he's just going to be so good.
Yeah, and the name of the movie is going to be The Voyage of Dr. Doolittle, so it sounds like they're basing it off of that book, almost. Yeah. That we reviewed, episode 2, yes. Check it out.
Yes.
It's probably because of us that they're doing it. Right?
Robert was probably like, you know, podcast I was listening to.
We must make this a film and I must be the Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah. So, and a lot of people probably already know about Jude Law going to be Albus Dumbledore. Yes. In the next Fantastic Beasts film.
Yes.
If you have not seen the first one, you must see it.
Go watch it and then watch it again.
Two actors that I love so much are going to be doing awesome film things, spawning from awesome book things.
Exactly.
So exciting. And that's pretty much the book news, guys.
Thanks, Mandy, for your book news.
Are you ready to get into this book?
Yes, let's do it.
The 1973 Newbery Medal winner, Julie of the Wolves, is by Jean Craighead George. And here is the little blurb about it. I did not write this. It says, my ex, like many adolescents, is torn. But unlike most, her choices may determine whether she lives or dies. At 13, an orphan and unhappily married, my ex runs away from her husband's parents' home, hoping to reach San Francisco and her pen pal. But she becomes lost in the vast Alaskan tundra, with no food, no shelter, and no idea which is the way to safety. Now, more than ever, she must look hard at who she really is. Is she my ex, Eskimo girl of the old ways? Or is she Julie, her Gussic or white people name, the modernized teenager who must mock the traditional customs? And when a pack of wolves begins to accept her into their community, my ex must learn to think like a wolf as well. If she trusts her Eskimo instincts, will she stand a chance of surviving? Question mark.
I know Mandy is at the edge of her seat. She doesn't know.
Right?
He didn't finish. I must know the answers.
All right, Leah, give us some author history and some background on this book.
And some answers.
I would love to. All right. Well, Jean Craighead George was born in Washington, D.C. on July 2nd, 1919. And many of her family members were naturalists, is what I read in several descriptions. Her father was an entomologist for the United States Forest Service, and it says the family often accompanied him on trips into the field. So her brothers grew up to be prominent naturalists. One studied grizzly bears and the other one, I don't know what he did. Actually, I didn't write that down. Apparently grizzly bears were the most interesting of those two. Yeah, that sounds
awesome.
So I think that, I don't know, her story kind of reminds me of Dr. Doolittle, actually. It's one of the things I read said, it was not until she started school that young Jean realized that her first pet, an eminently reasonable presence in the Craighead home, was not strictly conventional. She told a journal that by the time I got to kindergarten, I was surprised to find out I was the only kid with a turkey vulture. So she obviously started at a young age a love for nature.
Nice.
There was a great article in the New York Times they wrote when she passed away about her that's pretty interesting. And that's where I learned a lot of my information. She got a bachelor's degree from Penn State. She studied English and science. After that, she worked as a journalist for a press agency in Washington, D.C., and then later for the Washington Post, and she covered, she did feature pieces about the White House. So she had a kind of different start to her career, but then in 1944, she got married to John George, who is he was an ornithologist, someone who studies birds. I had to look that up.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was.
So when she got married, she started to focus more on her three children once they came along. And also her, and I'm guessing this was not all at one time, but they had over 173 pets. And that does not count cats and dogs.
Wow.
Nice.
So one of my favorite stories, and I think you guys will appreciate this as well. They had an owl that was the family pet.
Mm.
And he enjoyed showering with the family.
Wow.
So one of her sons made a sign that they hung up in the bathroom that said, "Please remove owl after your shower." I feel like their house was a lot of fun to grow up in. So
yeah, it sounds like it.
They had a crow that collected coins and dropped them down the rain spout of the local bank. So I'm not
nice.
Sure how it knew that was where it should do that. But then also...
That's awesome.
They also had a beaver that didn't last very long because it tried to gnaw down their furniture. So
yeah, can't do that.
Obviously, growing up in that household, all three of her children had an immense love for nature. And they would also kind of take turns going with their mom to study nature. So after she stopped working for the newspaper, she started writing articles. I know for sure the Reader's Digest was one of the places she wrote articles for, and she would take her children with her. And she talks about this on her website. She has an official website, JeanCraigheadGeorge.com. And on there, there's questions about writing and some of her inspiration. And she gives tips for young authors to get them started. And she was a big believer in once you know what you're going to write about, just go there, experience that, be wherever, whatever you're writing about. If you're writing about your school gymnasium, go to the school gymnasium. If you're writing about your backyard, go to the backyard. And for her, obviously, she wrote about more extreme nature, such as wolves. So she went there to live in Alaska with the wolves and study the people. And she would take her kids with her, which I think is awesome. So all three of them grew up to either be naturalists or, like, her daughter is apparently a children's writer that she writes about nature. So they all grew up to appreciate nature as their mother did. So she wrote over 100 books, all of them focusing on nature. She wrote, like, picture books and books for, you know, upper elementary 8 to 12-year-olds. But also I was tasked with discussing how this particular book was developed, which is pretty interesting. Julie of the Wolves did not start out as the primary focus of Jean. She actually went to Alaska because there were two scientific studies about wolves that she had read about and found extremely fascinating. And at the time, she was working for Reader's Digest, so they sent her there with one of her sons, Luke, to experience the different studies on wolves and their habits and language and all of that. And so she was supposed to write an article for Reader's Digest. So she went there. First thing, when they stepped off the plane, her son saw this young Eskimo girl kind of heading out into the wild by herself. And her son said, she's awfully young to be going off on her own like that. And that thought, I guess, kind of just stuck in Jean's head. They went on, they studied not only the wolves, but they also like had dinners with the Eskimos and just kind of tried to figure out their culture. And they're obviously very much survivalists, because to make it in Alaska, you have to, have to have some serious skills, especially before electricity and all of that good stuff. So she studied them. She just became fascinated with the people there and fell in love with them. And she was very excited about this article. And she seems like one of those people that just really pours her heart into everything she does, which I think most good authors are like that. And so when she came back and she wrote this awesome article, it was rejected by the Reader's Digest. And so she was very disappointed. And her kids were trying to cheer her up and trying to help her to just keep going, not give up. And her daughter suggested that she could take all that information and turn it into a children's book. So obviously that is where Julie of the Wolves comes from. She took all of that information and poured it into this book. And I love that it was her daughter that came up with that idea. Obviously she had a heart for children's literature because she became a children's author. But that story, I like to take away lessons from things like that. And that story I came away from as, it's a good inspiration for people that kind of go through experiences. They think they're going to do one thing with all of these life experiences, and then they get some sort of rejection or disappointment. And I think it's a good lesson to remember that wasn't in vain. You can take all of that and put it into something else. Like, don't give up. You don't know. With our worldview, obviously, we see God's hand in all these things. Right. You know, don't give up. You know, there's a purpose for this, a greater purpose. So I think that's neat that she didn't just say, whatever, I'm just throwing away all my research.
Yeah.
She took it and obviously inspired children, and then ended up writing two more books because her son and his family moved to Barrow, Alaska, which is one of the cities in the book. And so when she would go visit them, she still had that itch to write more about that and kept going. So that is my author and book background.
You can definitely tell that she knew what she was talking about when you read the book, because there's a lot of technical stuff.
Yes, for sure. And I love that. I don't know if you guys experienced this as well, but I felt like I had been to Alaska. Like, she obviously is very good at observation and kind of reiterating that to her readers. And I actually met a girl that lived in Alaska, and I was like, I feel like I've just been to Alaska. So I was like picking her brain, like trying
That's cool.
See if it was accurate.
Well, there's one thing that we have to talk about when we talk about this book.
Yes.
And I just want to get it out of the way now so that we can just move on when we're done. If you are listening to this podcast with children in the room or in the car, you might want to skip ahead a bit.
Yes, for sure.
Or listen to this without your kids first and then decide if it's appropriate for them. So there is a controversial scene in this book, and it takes place on pages 101 to 103. And it has, because of this scene, this book has been banned from school libraries over the years. I guess back in the 90s, it was banned from like a lot of libraries because this book is geared for fifth graders. And so a lot of people didn't think that this certain scene in the book was appropriate for fifth graders. So my ex is in an arranged marriage at 13. And up until this point, like she and her husband, she lives with her husband and his parents. And like, she's just doing kid stuff. She's going to school. She's helping out around the house. And so she's not like they're married officially, but they're not like doing married people things, if you know what I mean. And so her husband, Daniel, in the book, it kind of alludes to the fact that he has some type of, I guess, like mental disorder or something. She never says what it is. But anyway, in the book, the other kids are making fun of him and saying that he can't mate his wife. And so he comes home one day and he attacks her, basically, is what happens. So what do you guys, have you guys all read this scene? Mandy, have you read it?
Yes, okay. I did make it that far.
So some people are calling this scene explicit, and can I just give my opinion on this scene first, and then you guys can tell yours? So
sure.
When I read that scene, I don't know if I would say it's explicit, because after I read it, I was like, what just happened there? Like, I was confused about what exactly had happened. Mm-hmm. How about you guys? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I was also confused.
Yes.
Not like, I mean, obviously it wasn't great, but.
Well, you know that he has attacked her, but I wasn't sure. I guess what I was confused about was how far the attack went.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the reasoning I was confused was because of her response, how she threw up afterwards. Mm-hmm. And with what is written, I think myself as someone her age would have been shooken up,
mm-hmm.
but I don't feel that I would have thrown up with what is described. So I don't know if she added that in for adults to gather that, or if it was just that, and maybe that's how she thought someone of her age would respond, but that's my thoughts.
As it says that he kisses her and, like, you know, sticks his tongue in her mouth.
And it says that he pins her down.
Yeah. And then, you know, she says
that. Which none of that is okay.
No. Like, that would obviously freak me out, too, because you think, oh, he's done this, he's going to try it again, you know.
Right. Like, I would definitely be scared.
Yeah.
And would have done what she proceeded to do afterwards.
Yeah. This is the scene in the book that causes her to run away. So after that happens, she runs away.
I kind of also was confused because after the violence and whatnot, he says, tomorrow, I can, mm-hmm. can, ha ha. Like, that was his exact quotation. Mm-hmm. So I wondered if, like, that was almost a threat or something, and maybe kind of why she was like, I gotta get out of here, because
I didn't know if he was saying time. I'm gonna try again tomorrow, or if he was saying tomorrow I'm gonna tell them that I can mate my wife.
Right. Yeah. Right. Who knows?
I had the same thoughts, guys.
I mean, I read some other people's comments, and there were, like, on Goodreads, and there were some people who said that they had read it as a kid and then reread it as an adult. And they said, like, when they were a kid, like, that whole scene, like, just went over their head and they didn't fully understand what was going on.
Right.
I think I would have been that kid. I was a very, what's the word? How would you describe me as a child? I don't know. I just didn't get things. You either had to be right in my face about something, or I was not going to understand what was happening. And I was honestly like, I mean, you guys know I was like that up into my early 20s. So
yes, Lauren, I may have understood it at that age only to an extent. It wouldn't have been something that I think as an adult you think it's explicit because you're like, oh, you know, my children shouldn't. You understand,
right?
And I think as a kid, like, you're just going to read it and you're going to understand why she's running away, but you're not going to understand.
Right. I don't know. So what do you guys think? Do you think this is appropriate for fifth graders?
Thinking back, from a standpoint of if I was a parent, I would be iffy. But from the standpoint of how I know my brain worked as a fifth grader, I don't see an issue with it.
Yeah. What do you think, Leah?
I guess it would have definitely be up to each parent. I can't say that kids aren't experiencing more explicit material than that, you know, in movies and at that age, you know. I can't.
Yes.
I honestly don't think it's that bad.
I would not call it explicit because I didn't understand what was happening.
And I think it was dealt with pretty vaguely. Mm-hmm. And
it's very vague. Yeah.
I think that kids, especially today, see the news and they understand that other kids are abused, mm-hmm. and there's mm-hmm. difficult situations. So, I mean, I guess you have to know your kid and how they're going to handle something like that. But I don't know. I'm not one of those stick your head in the sand kind of people.
No, and I'm even not
when
either.
I was that age, yeah. I wasn't. So,
do I think they should remove it from libraries?
No. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think, here's my opinion on it. If you're going to let your kid read this, and I know a lot of parents do this just with every book, like they will read the book with their kids.
Right.
Or the parent will like read ahead like a few chapters, you know, than their kids are reading, so they kind of know what's right. coming, because then you can talk, like, let this be a discussion, you know,
right?
And maybe a good question to ask your child is like, what do you think happened here in this scene, and then just hear what right. they think, and then if
right
and then just leave it at that, you know. If they don't fully understand what happened, then I would say then you just don't say anything and just, you know.
Right, or just ask them, like, do you have any questions about yeah, this scene? Exactly. Or, you know, like, this part of the book, did it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm...
Well, I'm not going to say...
capable
this
of,
is like... the answer. I think, as a parent, you need to decide for your own child.
Obviously,
I would yes. hope that if my child were in school, like, in fifth grade, and this book were assigned for, like, reading or something, I would hope that the teacher would send a note home and say, hey, there's this scene, you know, if right. if you don't want your child to read this book, I respect that, you know.
Right.
But mm-hmm. just giving parents a heads up if it is, like, you know, required reading for school or something.
Yeah. I don't know. It's curious to me that it was banned. Obviously, it's not anymore. But having lived in New York City, the things that they talk about with children at a very young age surprises me.
Yeah.
Before fifth grade, they'll discuss these types of things.
Yeah.
You know, basically doing like a sex ed class okay. for those kids.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think this scene would be nothing compared to what some children are exposed exactly. to. Not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just
no,
saying.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, well, have we gotten that out of our system?
I yes, think we're good. Please. Let's move
okay,
on.
Let's move on. We're moving on. Let's talk about some themes in this book, guys.
Let's.
So the first one I just listed was traditions and customs versus like modern ways, I guess. And that just seems to be kind of the tension between the two throughout this whole book.
Yeah, and it starts right at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
basically. You definitely see, are we just going to call her Mayax? I think we should probably clarify, in case people did not read the book, that Julie of the Wolves, her actual name is Mayax.
Oh yeah, her Eskimo name is Mayax, and her like
English name
is Julie.
Yeah, basically.
But yeah, for the majority of this book, she goes by Mayax. So yeah, that can be kind of confusing.
Which is also kind of traditional versus modern. Yeah. Because
well, she's kind she of deciding name. Just throughout the book, like whether she wants to be called Julie or whether she wants to be called Mayax. And it's like this very coming of age story of whether, you know, of who she's going to be as a person. Is she going to stick with the traditions mm-hmm. or is she going to, you know, move on to the modern ways? And she has her pen pal, Amy, who lives in San Francisco, and she's telling her about all these modern conveniences and, you know, this is what the kids do here for fun and, you know, this is how we wear our hair. And so she's just kind of going back and forth between the two.
And her father always trained her in the very old school mm-hmm. traditions of the Eskimo way of survival and all of that. So she's definitely trying to decide.
Which is
in her
most
mind.
Useful.
Yeah, it's becoming very helpful for her as exactly. she is in the wilderness.
And even her experience with that Daniel's family, she learns a lot
oh, yeah.
from them too mm-hmm. for sewing and...
Yeah, mm-hmm. like she has a lot of skills. You know, like, I'm just thinking, like, these children, like, these Eskimo children have so many skills.
I was reading it, like, why can't I do any of this?
Right. Well, I think we all agreed that, like, we would just die. I mean.
If I were out in the wilderness, I would not make it. I would have no idea.
You might figure it out.
I don't think so, Mandy.
I don't think so.
I would die. And okay. On the one hand, it would be for lack of knowledge. But on the other hand, like, she had to do some things that were kind of gross. And I just, part of me would just be like, I'd rather die than do that. Because I have,
oh my
that
goodness.
Just sounds disgusting.
Well, yeah, she did the things that you would do in the days of old before, you know.
You can tell that we did not grow up grow up in an outdoorsy family.
We don't do camping. We were not Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts. No.
I mean, we played outside, but then we went back inside to the comforts of.
We had a bath every night and a warm bed. Exactly. And our parents cooked dinner for us.
I'm not going to totally rule myself out as dead. I feel like I might figure it out.
Mandy thinks that she will survive.
I did not say I totally think I would survive.
I just want to know, have you been camping?
I've never been anywhere? Camping. Okay. But that's because I don't like snakes. But if something happened, if there was a situation where I were to be forced into this situation, you know, you just, isn't there like an instinct that kicks in? Like you're just like, kill the snake.
I think humans have within us just this will to live. So I think you're right. Yeah, like, I think we would, I think I would do everything I could. I just wouldn't like it.
No.
I would complain a lot.
Of course you wouldn't like it. I say that my ex didn't even necessarily like it.
All these things she was doing, it was just all this matter of fact. Like, yeah, I'm just going to go carve out the innards of this moose that I just killed. And, you know, okay, I'm just going to, I'm going to use these to form like a fire. And then I'm going to use this to form like tent skins and all that, and I'm just like, and it was just matter of fact, like she just knew how to do this stuff.
She definitely had like whatever on her side, that she grew up with this stuff and learned this stuff, and so it was matter of fact to her, I guess. You know, if you'd only ever grown up eating the insides of whatever and killing things to eat them and use all their stuff, then that's what you're going to know. And that's not weird to you.
Yeah. I think this all, I mean, especially our point of view comes from living in a modern society that doesn't see where their food comes from anymore.
And that's what I like. That's true. Like, so we've talked about the coming of age part. We've talked about like, so now let's move on to nature. I think we're moving into the nature part. And, like, survival.
Yeah, I think we kind of just, like...
We're kind of bouncing right around to that. The themes, but...
well, it's kind of all...
It is. It's,
sewn
like...
Sewn together.
Interwoven, but... I really loved that about their culture, about how, like, they use all the parts of whatever animal they've killed.
Right.
There's just this respect for these animals. Like, they aren't just killing them for fun. Like, they're using... Like, they're using it, and they're being... For lack of a better term that I can't come up with right now, like they're being conservative with it, like they're they're, you know, being efficient with it. That's the word I was looking for. They're not wasting anything, and I just really like that. Just was it resonated with me, you know? Because you're right. Like we live in this day and age where a lot of us, like, we go to the grocery store and we get our food and we have no idea where it's come from. And don't get me. You don't want to hear me get started.
I think I totally, like, I'm with you on we're not as careful with our food. I also think it's curious to me, and I've mentioned this before. So obviously growing up in the Midwest, you have people that hunt and you're just kind of used to that. Going to New York City, a lot of the people I came in contact with were very against hunting. And obviously there's different ways of hunting. Yeah. There's hunting for sport. Most of the people I know in the Midwest that hunt use that to feed their family. Not all, but most. And it was interesting to me, like, these people in New York that would be all about, like, no hunting, no animal cruelty. And I definitely am not for animal cruelty, like, that, just be clear with that. But they were not vegetarians.
Right.
And so I feel like they didn't quite understand what was happening.
Where do you think your meat comes from?
Your meat is probably taken care of way less humanely than my Midwestern friends that go out and hunt.
Don't get me started on that.
So, like, and I just think that if you truly do care about nature and animal cruelty, that you should definitely try to be more aware of where your food is coming from. And I think also with, like, the Christian community, there's this mentality of, like, don't take my guns, and, like, you know, they just don't understand all of that. And I think that if you view these animals as creations of God, that, you know, I'm not against eating meat, but I do think we need to appreciate and not be wasteful. Yeah. And be responsible. Like,
well, I mean, that's, I mean, God has given us dominion over the earth and over the animals, you know, as humans. But I mean, that's what it says in the Bible. It talks about, like, you're caring for the earth and I give you dominion over them. But, you know, not just to, like, he never said it's okay to just abuse and kill animals for the fun of it. Like, just
because we have dominion.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's they're there to provide sustenance for you.
Exactly.
And your family. And like one more thing I wanted to add about that is like, I think if I had to do all that work to make dinner, and you know me, I really don't like cooking. If it has more than like three ingredients and like two steps, it's not like, I just don't like doing it.
That's true.
I do it.
True story.
I do it, but I don't like it. So like if I had to go through all that work just to make dinner, I mean, just think how much more you would appreciate it. You know, exactly. Like you just appreciate your food so much more. And I've started reading the sequel to this book, and there's a part in the book where there's like this special ceremony when like all the hunters have come back in and they've caught a whale or something. So they just have like this special like feast, you know, where they're cutting the whale and they're preparing it, and it's like this all night celebration, you know, in their community. Because they're just so thankful, and like in that community in the book, like they're kind of running out of food, and it's almost like a drought kind of situation is happening, and they just don't have a lot of food, and so like they were just so thankful for that, and it just kind of brought everyone together, and everyone was helping out, and I don't know, it just reminds me of that scene in Brother Bear where they're like, you guys seen Brother Bear?
The whole time I was reading this book, I was like, I've got a Brother Bear vibe.
I know,
here,
it's
man.
Like, welcome to our family. You know that Phil Collins song? If you haven't seen Brother Bear, watch it.
With the commentary.
And then watch the commentary.
And the commentary. Yes.
For years.
That's the best part.
For years, I had never actually seen the movie. I just watched the commentary. You totally... It's so funny.
I was the same. Her and I both did that.
So funny. But the soundtrack to that movie is awesome. It's just epic. Phil Collins. He's a genius.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay.
Anyway, I just appreciate that. Just the hard work that's put in, and just the thankfulness and the appreciation that they have just for everything that they have, like their food, their clothes, their tools, their house, everything.
Yeah. And I think we were talking off air about when you watch those nature documentaries and you see, you know, like, oh, this animal's about to be killed by this predator, and then, oh, it's saved, and you're so thankful, but then I think you were, what were you watching?
The,
like, foxes or something?
Oh, I think it was Disney that, and this was a few years ago, I know they've come out with another one, but it was, like, Earth, you know? It's on Netflix now, or at least it was a few months ago, and I was watching it, and it was, like, this mountain lion is chasing after a mountain goat, and it's, like, running and chasing it. And, like, the whole time you're like, oh, my goodness, is the goat going to get away? Or is it going to get eaten? Well, the goat gets away. And you're like, yeah, the goat got away. Well, then it shows you the mountain lion going back to her den. And you see all these little baby mountain lions, her little cubs. And the commentator is like, and the mother has no food to give to her babies. And I'm just like, oh, she can't feed her babies. You know, and you just, your heart is breaking for the lion cub now.
Yeah.
Or the mountain lion, you know.
And I think in this book, it does such a good job of showing how nature works together, because there's like a lemming shortage and that just ruins everything. Like this one tiny little thing.
Yep.
Because it kills this other thing and then the other thing, and then the wolves are hungry.
Yeah, like,
and
these animals are migrating because there's no food chain. And it's
exactly. So I think it's awesome how it can teach kids, you know, how that works.
Yeah, man. Ecosystems.
And the nerd is coming
look
out.
I've stopped. Yeah. Okay, I didn't, I wasn't gonna go any further. Okay.
So before we move away from the nature theme, I through this book remembered in my childhood, I don't know how old I would have been, probably 7 or 8. I had like an intense love for all things nature.
Yes.
And so like I liked to try to heal the worms outside. I remember that. Like, kept, which is, now that I look back, kind of cruel, but I kept these, like, toads in this window well.
Look, they chose to live there.
Yeah, that's true. They did. They were born there. So I like, fancied myself a little zookeeper and, like, kept them and tried to give them food and water. Like, I didn't do much to help them, but, and then we went fishing a lot, and so I enjoyed that. And I loved watching these, like, nature documentaries. Like, I watched this one video about this little fox family, and I've tried all week to find it. I cannot. I don't know what it was, what it was called. I don't know. But I loved it. Like, and it was, like, it was an actual fox family, and you follow them and their survival, and, like, it was just narrated, and it was one of my favorite movies. So reading this book, like, brought out the little Leah little in me. Leah. And I was like, nature, I remember you.
So you would have loved this You've book as been a child. Hidden
by the screens.
I would have, yes. And I might have read it as a kid. I don't remember much of my childhood, but yes. Young Leah would have, like, devoured this book and the two sequels. So. Yeah. If you have a nature lover in your family and you're okay with them reading the intense scene on pages 102 and whatever they are.
You could just skip it. Like, and I just be like, this book. Yeah. You know, her husband was mean to her, so she left. And just leave it in there. Like,
black it all out and just write that at the top.
No, it definitely, if you're like, or if you have a child who's more into, like, the nonfiction and you're trying to get them into fiction, this, I think, is a good foot in the door.
I agree.
Because there's just she's just very good at describing nature and all of it. It's just good.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Out. So another theme was, like, language and communication. So, like, especially, like, when she's trying to communicate with the wolves and how she learns how to communicate with them. And she just, for the longest time, she just watches them and watches how they communicate with each other. And she just, she was very brave. Like, I think of going up to them and, like, I think at one point she has to nibble on their nose or something. And I'm going, dude, if that hadn't have worked, she could have got her face bit off or something, you know? Like,
exactly.
Just crazy. And, like, how she, like, was, she made sure that she, like, when she was around the wolves, she would crawl on her hands and knees. Because anytime she stood up, you know, she could tell, like, they didn't like that, you know? And so, just different things like that.
Yes. She was very observant. Mm-hmm. I liked that characteristic.
Yeah. I mean, I want to try to use some of these tactics on a dog or something and see if it works. Right. Like, one of the things that she did.
Lauren's going to be biting dogs' noses.
Or, like, she would put her hand on top of their nose. That was another way she would show that she was, like, you know, the alpha or whatever. And, like, she would, like, you know, bare her teeth and, like, kind of growl, you know, at certain things. And I don't know. It was just really interesting. And, like, I was reading some of the comments on Goodreads, and some people were like, yeah, I was totally skeptical about this, and then I tried it on my dog and it totally worked, you know. So
that's awesome.
I have actually heard of that. I've actually heard of training dogs and teaching them that you are the alpha by growling at them and stuff like that. So
it makes sense. I mean, that's their language, obviously. Yes. So it would be a lot easier to communicate with them.
Right.
We don't respond well when someone just starts, like, speaking Chinese to us.
I don't think they're going to learn. I don't think the wolves are going to learn how to talk like we talk. So,
man,
we just got to learn how they talk.
I have heard cats, when they roll over on their back like they do sometimes, like in front of humans, that's them showing that they trust you. Yeah.
I've heard the same thing kind of with all animals. I think that's kind of...
Yeah. Jane is doing that right now.
Oh, she trusts you.
Oh,
she does.
So sometimes my cat would do that, I think, to lure me in for the kill.
Yeah, your cat was evil.
She was. Like, she'd roll on her back and I'd go down to pet her and then she'd bite me. He was like, watch this, everybody. Do this,
the human thinks I'm trustworthy.
She just outsmarted you.
She was a stinker. So, like, the book is just written like, there's a lot of flashback scenes. And so in one of the flashbacks, it goes into, like, just this relationship she has with her dad and how her mother died when she was very young. And so she's just been her and her dad and how he's taught her everything she knows. And they're just very close. And then one day, you know, her aunt shows up and says, hey, she needs to be in school. So I'm going to take her and she's going to go to school. And just like, I don't know, like that just kind of ripped my heart out when she had to leave her dad and like go mm-hmm. away and be separated from him. Cause I'm just like, oh, that must have been really sad for her to have to leave. And then, you know, for a while, you know, news comes that her dad went out on this boat trip and never came back. And so, you know, she hasn't seen him in, you know, however long. And now he's dead, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And so then, so you have that aspect, that family situation, and then you have her family situation of when she's entered into this arranged marriage, and like kind of that family dynamic of how like she's basically like, I don't know, for me it was like she was basically just adopted by this family by way of her marrying their son,
right?
And so she just kind of yep. did, she kept being a kid, like she was going to school and just helping around the home, just kind of being a kid with this other family, and until, you know, what happens, and then she decides to run away. And then she meets her family of the wolves, and you see that family dynamic, and it's just, you know, we've talked about this in our last podcast about, our last episode about how, you know, just home can mean different things, and this book mm-hmm. kind of does that with that as well. With the different, her different mm-hmm. Home situations.
Yeah, I thought it was sweet how she even, when she decides she's just going to like, spoiler, Mandy, this is, at one point she decides, like, I'm just going to live out here on mm-hmm. my own. And so she basically makes her own igloo yep. and like decorates her yep. own little home. And I just thought that was kind of a sweet yeah. moment that she, like, that's such yeah. a nesting thing to do. Like, this is
exactly. Like, but like, it was just, that was, that kind of tied in with the coming of age thing, because like that happens toward the end of the book and she has to make a decision, like, am I going to be Myax and just live out in the wilderness, or am I going to be Julie and, you know, live in this modern community,
right?
You know, so let's just, I mean, look, if you haven't read the book, go read it and then listen to the rest of this podcast. So because at the end she finds out that her dad is alive, and she finds him, and she finds that he has remarried, and he's married a white woman. She's got red curly hair, and he's, you know, living more modernly than, you know, as opposed to the traditional Eskimo ways. And she, you know, she makes this decision at the end of the book, like, am I going to stay with him, or am I going to just go live in the wilderness? And she has to, and that's why I had to read the second book, because I wasn't really sure what she decided exactly.
Yes. And to further help Mandy along with her need to know, and I don't think you got this far, Mandy, the alpha, like, father wolf, Amarok, her adopted father. I think that's how you say that.
That's how I say it.
In my head, that's how I said it. He ends up getting shot by hunters that are hunting out of this. Was it an yes. airplane, right? Not a helicopter.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. And so he gets shot.
I cried when I read that.
And
what?
I was
so too. Upset.
I did too. And so then.
Guys.
Capu, I guess.
I say Capu. But I guess Capu, it could be Capu.
However you decide to call him.
So let's just, can we?
I think I said it like
Let's
Capu.
Just talk about the characters real quick before we get in. So we have Amarok, who's the alpha leader of the wolf pack. We have his mate, mm-hmm. Silver. And then they have the mm-hmm. wolf puppies. So Capu or Capu or however you guys say it. He's like the head puppy, you know. And then there's Zit, Zat, Zing. And then Sister. She's the girl one. And then there's Nails. He's another wolf in the wolf pack. And then there's Jello. And so, like, my ex has given them all these names. Obviously, they didn't come up and say, hey, my name's Amarok.
Yo. Well, and Amarok is, like, Eskimo for wolf
yeah.
or something.
And so basic. She names Capu after her dad. His name is Capujin. So she names him after her dad. So there's that. We can continue now.
It's so after Amarok dies, is killed.
And Kapu
by the hunters,
gets shot as well. She has to nurse him back to health. She saves him.
Yes.
I don't want to finish this book now.
But Kapu, we'll just call him that, he becomes a leader. He takes his place as leader, and you kind of see his leadership tendencies supposedly before that. But then he becomes the leader. Silver tries to come in and say, like, oh, okay, I'll be right. Silver, I think, did. Tried to come in and say, I'll be the leader, but then the leader wolf puppy said, no, I'm going to do it. Yeah. That moment made me emotional, too. These are
wolves. But anyway, she, it's kind of alluded to at the end of the book that her dad was the hunter that shot Amarok and Kapu.
Which totally, yeah, yes, totally shatters her world and her view of her father. And so that's why she is stuck with this decision. Like, do I turn my back on what I've learned about nature?
That's an easy decision.
Or do I, well.
I mean, yeah, I thought so.
Sort of.
And she's got this little bird that kind of hangs around with her. Tornay. Is that how you say it?
He becomes. That's how I said it. It looks like that.
I forget what kind of.
I would love to have
a
little
bird. He's this little bird. And so she's kind of all. He's all she has left of the wild. Like, when she finds her dad. And so, like, when she finds out that he, you know, he's the hunter who killed her wolf, she says, okay, I'm going to leave. I can't stay here. And so she goes out into the wild. And more sadness happens. Tornay dies. And that's when she, like, the last line of the book, like, Tornay dies. And then it says she turns her boots toward her father. And so it's like.
And that's the end.
What happens in the next book, Lauren?
Well, I'm not going to tell you exactly what happens. I will say she does go back to her dad. You find out why her dad shot the wolf. So that kind of gave me some closure on that, some explanation. She still communicates with her wolf pack throughout the book. I'm only like halfway through. So she's communicating with them by like howling and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a tale of like more coming of age stuff. She meets a man, a boy. We all know where that. We all know where that. Yeah, a man cub.
Nice.
So yeah, it has definitely answered a lot of my questions so far, and I'm kind of enjoying the sequel more than the first book.
I'll consider reading it.
So
I might have to read that.
I will consider it. Maybe I can get audiobook.
I couldn't find it on audio, not through the library anyway.
To invest in audio.
But yeah, the next book's called Julie. And she didn't write, so the first book, Julie of the Woods, was written in the 70s. She didn't write this book till like the early 90s. Because, I mean, she hadn't.
Yeah. Dude, there were people waiting around for answers for decades.
I don't think she intended to write.
Well, it wasn't
a sequel.
No.
But I'm glad she did. It's very good. And so far, there aren't any controversial scenes. So that's good.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. So, answers. Get answers in this book.
So, probably like you. Ladies, after reading this, I was like, okay, like, you hear stories, and I think just recently they found some child that was being raised by monkeys
in India.
So an interesting Google search is to look for, I don't even remember what I ended up searching, but children that were raised by animals, basically. And there are at least, there was like a list of seven kids that had been raised by either dogs or wolves or monkeys or just random groups of animals that kind of have that pack mentality where they take care of each other. And obviously the children were not super healthy when they were found, but they had all, like, they all communicated in the same way as the animals they were being taken care of by. And I know them with the monkey situation, like, the monkeys tried to attack the humans that were trying to rescue this child. Very protective. And so they obviously have accepted these children as one of their tribe. Or a pack or whatever. So that was it's an interesting search if you are intrigued.
I want to be a wolf.
Well, Mandy. we'll talk off air, okay?
I want to be a wolf.
And I could just go outside at night and I could just howl at the moon.
I mean, you could do that now.
Yeah, but I'll be like a freak.
The coyotes would respond to you. We have those in our area.
It's true. We have a lot of those. They are loud at night.
They are.
Well, I enjoyed the book once I got further in.
Yeah, I would say the same. It was kind of hard to get into at first. But yeah, once you get going.
But then when I got sucked in, like I was sucked in. I was like, what's she going to do next?
I need answers.
For sure. The third book is written from the perspective of the wolf pack. So if you're intrigued by the first two. I will be
reading that one next. So yes. Interesting books. She never makes it to San Francisco that I know of. I mean, I'm only halfway through the second book, so. And it, so far, she doesn't have any intention of going to San Francisco. So, sorry, Amy. You're never going to meet Julie. Or will she?
Poor Amy.
Maybe she should go to Alaska. Maybe she should.
So, are we ready to move on to some Newbery facts and figures? Have you guys gotten everything out of your system?
I am... Yes. Always ready for facts and figures by Lauren.
I'm excited about these. Okay, so there were three 1973 Newbery Honor books. First one is Frog and Toad Together by Arnold LaBelle. I just love these Frog and Toad books. I don't know if you guys have ever read them. Have you?
We read them in school. They were always my favorite.
Easy reader books. I use them a lot with kids that I tutored in reading.
I never have.
Well, here, let me tell you about it.
You know what, Mandy?
Okay. Go ahead. It says, Frog and Toad are best friends. They do everything together. When Toad admires the flowers in Frog's garden, Frog gives him seeds to grow a garden of his own. When Toad bakes cookies, Frog helps him eat them. And when both Frog and Toad are scared, they are brave together. The school and life. I know, it's friendship. It's great. The School and Library Journal called this beloved story collection from Arnold LaBelle a masterpiece of child-styled humor and sensitivity. So these books are geared for kids who read on their own but still need help.
I always found them very funny. One of our teachers read them aloud to us. And it was always my favorite part of the day because it was so funny.
They are. There's some really cute humor in it. The one that I remember reading is like... Oh, like one of them wakes up and just he sees the clothes on his floor and the dishes in his sink and he's just like, I'm going back to bed. I don't want to do this today. And so the other one comes over. It's like, no. If you hang your clothes up and you do the dishes today, then you won't have to do it tomorrow. And he's like, oh, yay. And that's just a good life lesson, you know, like do it today and then you won't have to do it tomorrow.
Nice.
I wish my house cleaning were that simple, though. Just do the dishes and hang clothes up.
Right.
So, let's see. The second book that was an honor award was The Upstairs Room. So, this is a bit of historical fiction. Almost like... Well, I'll read it and you guys can... You'll know what I'm talking about. I do that a lot. I try to describe things before I tell people and they're just like, where are you going with this, Lauren? All right. So... In the part of the marketplace where flowers had been sold twice a week, tulips in the spring, roses in the summer, stood German tanks and German soldiers. Annie DeLue was 8 years old in 1940 when the Germans attacked Holland and marched into the town of Winterswijk, where she lived. I'm totally pronouncing that wrong. Annie was 10 when, because she was Jewish and in great danger of being captured by the invaders, she and her sister had to leave their father, mother, and older sister, Rachel, to go into hiding in the upstairs room of a remote farmhouse. So this book is written by Johanna Reese, I think is how you say it. But her full name is Johanna DeLue Reese. And so this is her account of her own experience as a young girl during World War II. It says, like many adults, she was innocent of the German plans for Jews, and she might have gone to a labor camp, as scores of families did. So anyway, it just talks more about that. So it was really, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, I thought of Leah when I read this, because it sounds like something right up her alley.
Yes. I am very intrigued by that era, and always enjoy. Obviously, not enjoy, but... It's interesting to me to hear the stories.
I enjoy, like, just hearing these stories of survivors. Like, it just...
Yes.
What they went through and how they got through it. And now, you know, a lot of them are alive. They're much older, obviously, but they're alive to tell about it. And it's just, you know, that human desire to live, you know?
Yeah.
Just survive. So the third book, this book, made me think of Mandy. And you guys will find out.
Oh.
It's called The Witches of Wyrm by Zilpha Keatley Snyder. So it says, Jessica has read enough books to know that her cat, Wyrm, Wyrm is the cat's name, must be a witch's cat. He's cast a spell on her, but to whom can she turn? After all, no one will believe that Wyrm has bewitched her. And so I'm reading down, because that's all that you get in the description of the book on Goodreads. So I'm reading down to some of the people's comments. And so here's kind of what happens in this book. So this little girl, she finds a cat in a cave. She finds an abandoned kitten. He's hairless, eyeless, ugly, and silent. And so she feels sorry for it, but not enough to like want to take him in on her own. So she goes to the cat lady in town and tries to give it to the cat lady, and she refuses to take care of it. So Jessica decides, okay, I guess I'll take care of this cat. And so she has to feed it every 2 hours and, you know, clean up its poop and stuff. And she, like, it says, like, she hates this cat. She's disgusted with it. But yet she still takes care of it. But I guess she's also, like, verbally abusive to it. She names it Wyrm.
Poor Wyrm.
But as the cat grows up, it says he's, you know, he never, like, he's always looks kind of creepy. And, you know, it says he never plays, he never meows, he's always silent. Then he starts talking to her. And he, oh, yeah. Yes. And he says, I'm a witch's cat. And so he starts, I'm just going to read what this person wrote instead of trying to summarize. It says, then Wyrm starts telling Jessica to do awful things, evil things, malicious things, and Jessica feels helpless to resist. This is Carmen on Goodreads. Thank you, Carmen. She says, this book received a Newbery Award citation in 1973. It is one of the most chilling and disturbing pieces of literature I've ever read.
Oh, no.
I was introduced to it as a child, and it's haunted me all my life. She says,
well, there's why it didn't win.
Yeah, she says, right? I adore it and hold it up as one of the best examples of children's literature ever written. This book has been banned multiple times for themes of witchcraft.
Oh my god.
Poor
goodness.
Wyrm.
But honestly though, I was just like, Mandy, like you like all that horror stuff. So I thought, well, this is perfect for her, because everybody that you guys need to go on Goodreads and just read the comments, because all these people are like, yeah, this book scared me, and but I just really liked it. It was like really creepy, but I don't know. There's like a real, like, if I read, because some of these have spoilers, and I read it, so there's like a big twist in this book. Like, whoa. So I won't say what it is, but if you want to know what it is, you can either read the book or read the comments under,
read the reviews on Goodreads.
Yeah, some of these people, let's see, like Carmen's review kind of tells the whole story, so it's quite interesting.
Nice.
So yeah, I would not read this book.
maybe I'll check out.
But I think Mandy would. Yeah. The Witches
of Wyrm. I
think I'll
just read the Goodreads comments.
Yeah, I see what's up.
But yeah, when you read the twist, you're like, whoa. What? So anyway, after we've discussed all those, why do you think Julie of the Wolves won the medal? And do you agree that Julie of the Wolves should have won the medal? Or do you think one of these other books should have won it?
I agree.
Why?
Lauren! I mean, I like the description of the other ones, and they sound like solid books. I understand why they were, you know, contenders. But I don't know. I just feel like Julie of the Wolves was just... I feel like every time when we do this, it just seems like the one that won is, like, a solid, all-around, like... It's just a well-rounded story.
Sure.
With...
It's got the complete package.
Yes. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. What do you think, Leah?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I don't know. I mean, Frog and Toad is not exactly... You learn life lessons.
Yeah, I was surprised that book got a Newbery Honor, like, medal.
I mean...
Or, oh, yeah.
It's a
just,
pretty...
It's not a book that I would have given an honor medal to.
Yeah, but it has stood the test of time.
Has.
I mean...
Yes.
I think it's a pretty, you know, it's considered like a children's classic.
Yeah.
I think that it was, obviously a well-written book.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to read The Upstairs Room. I think from all of, well, I don't know about The Witches of Worm. I'm very skeptical about that book.
That one's kind of creepy.
I think from the other two and Julie of the Wolves that won, I think you learn, you know, pretty basic life lessons that kids that age need to be learning about, you know, what's important in life and good character and stuff like that. But
yes, I
think Julie of the Wolves was a solid pick. Seemed like they had a rough year for kids books that year, though.
Yeah, it does sound like that. When I was first typing up our show notes, I was not done with the book yet. So I was typing all this up and I was reading about the other books that got, you know, nominated. And I honestly was like, yeah, I don't think Julia the Wolf should have won. I would have picked that Upstairs Room book. But now that I'm done with it, reading the second book, like, I mean, I would have to read the Upstairs Room to give like a definitive answer. But just now that I'm done with Julia of the Wolves, like, I really enjoyed it. And I don't know, I just think the things that I've learned from that book and just the emotions that I went through reading it, like, will just stay with me for a really long time.
Yes.
I don't know, it just kind of, it was good, you know? It didn't, like, I mean, I cried when Amarok died, but it wasn't one of those books where I was, like, weepy the whole time, which most of the time, that's how I am. I don't really cry a lot, but I think it was deserving of the medal.
For sure.
Yes.
Well, Mandy, tell us. Tell the people.
Oh, yes, I have decided.
Goodness.
I have chosen the next book, which will be the 2004 Newbery Medal winner, The Tale of Despero, being the story of a mouse, a princess, some soup, and a spool of thread, by Kate, how do you say her last name?
DiCamillo.
DiCamillo.
Yes, and we love her.
We love her so much.
She is Flora and Ulysses author, so... I'm looking forward to this. I'm very excited.
I think you'll finish this book.
I hope so. I'm on vacation this week, so there's a good chance that I will.
You might finish this book and a few others.
Maybe. Let's not get too ambitious now.
No, I read this book, oh goodness, 6 or 7 years ago. I think it was around the time it came out. Well, obviously not. 2004 was more than 6 or 7 years ago.
We're not very good at math. Stop fooling
yourself, Lauren.
I don't know. Sometimes I just forget how old I am and how much time has gone by. But no, I really did read it 6 or 7 years ago. So it was obviously after it came out. But I don't remember what happened. I remember there's a mouse and a princess and some soup and a spool of thread. But
oh my goodness.
So I'm glad I'll be reading it again. But yeah, we decided. So, you know, Leah picked Flora and Ulysses and I picked Julia of the Wolves. So Mandy gets to pick this book. So Leo will get to pick the next book.
Yes. So,
but you'll have to wait.
I've already done
You'll have to wait till our next episode to find out what that book will be.
Secrets.
Yeah. So go out, pick up a copy of The Tale of Despero or get it at your library. Read along with us.
At your local bookstore for $7.99.
Whoa. Yeah.
Ooh, and then, good deal.
I think there was a movie. I haven't seen that. I might check that out.
There was. You know? Yep.
So we can talk about that. So yeah, if you've read that book already or you want to read along, just shoot us an email. And Mandy, tell the people how they can get in touch with us.
I will do that. You can email us at teamfriendshippodcast@gmail.com.
And you can go to our website at teamfriendshippodcast.com.
On Facebook, we are Team Friendship.
On Instagram, we are Team Friendship Podcast.
And on Twitter, we are @3FriendsPodcast. And I run that one, so I'm trying to be better about it. So like us and retweet us and all that stuff.
So yeah, do what Kathy and Laura have done. And shoot us a message. Let us know you're listening, if you're listening. If you have comments or maybe book suggestions. Maybe there's a Newbery book that you really like that you want us to review next. Shoot us some book suggestions and we will take that into account.
Yes. Read along with
us. Yeah, we would love to. I would just love to hear some some listener comments on the books, or maybe you have a comment on past books we've reviewed. We'd love to hear those as well. Yes. So yeah, send us your feedback. Leave us a review on iTunes, like and share our posts. And when you do that, that helps others to find our podcast too.
Yes.
All right, guys.
Share the friendship.
Share it. I like that. Hashtag share the friendship. Let's start it now.
We're going to do it.
All right, guys. It's been real. We didn't talk as much on this one as our last one, but that's okay.
It's all right.
It's probably a good thing.
Probably for the best.
I think we got to the point.
It's less work for me to do in post-production, so.
Well, yes. We did it for you, Lauren.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Well, we'll see you all on another time.
And remember, no two persons ever read the same book. And if you're Mandy, you were oh so close this time.
My name's Lauren.
Oh my word.
You didn't introduce
okay,
us.
We're starting over. Well, you said. Okay, everybody, we're starting over.
All right, let's clap again.
All right.
You gotta clap again.
It's not in the show notes. I'd just like to point out it is not in the show notes.
It's not.
Sorry, next time I will type out. And here with me is my good friend,
well,
Lauren.
You type out everything else.
Oh, my word.
All right. One.
I'm really hot. Let's keep
two,
going.
Three.
Tweet this to Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, boy.
I want to meet him before I die.
Oh, goodness.
My birthday is Monday.
The 1973 Newbery I'm going to do that over again, okay, guys?
Edit. All right, let's keep this.
Let's keep rolling. So next thing we got is, you know, family and the home.
Family.
You know.
What?
What? What is happening?
I don't know. There was like everyone was talking. I didn't know.
I said family.